The state of Tennessee is one of the few places where the sounds are just as breathtaking as the sights.
Whether that's live music at an historic music venue, the crack of an open fire at a campsite in the wilderness, or hearing kids laugh as they explore what's right around the bend, Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Start planning your trip at tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
The Kakadu plum is an Australian native superfood containing 100 times more vitamin C than oranges. So why have you never heard of it? PR. No one's drinking a Kakadu smoothie? I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Ridiculous History is a production of iHeartRadio.
Welcome back to the show, Ridiculous Historians. Shout out to our super producer, Mr. Max Williams. You're Noel Brown. I'm Ben Bolin. Now, Noel, this is part two of an amazing conversation we have had with the puzzler himself, the legendary author, A.J. Jacobs.
Too cool. And I just have to say, I couldn't even bring it upon myself to believe that he really is a fan of the show. But he's dropping so many deep cuts from like episodes that we forgot we even did. It turns out it's actually the case. And I think we're both beyond flattered because we're huge fans of AJ's work as well. And this conversation went all kinds of fun places. And I think we can probably just join it already in progress.
What are some of the, I don't know, we talked about the sociological sort of milieu or environment within which these crazes, good and bad, grow, right? Puzzles can become incredibly popular. Witch hunts happen historically, right? When people are looking for some sort of escape, some sort of cause that they can blame. And maybe we go back to something you mentioned with jigsaws and the Great Depression, because at first glance, honestly, it sounds like jigsaws might be a difficult thing for people in the Depression. Money is tight. You have to buy the puzzle, right? I guess you could rent a jigsaw. That's a good
business
idea. There
were jigsaw libraries during the Depression. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. Well, just to back up, jigsaws were invented in 1760 by this British map maker named John Spilsbury.
That tracks.
He called them dissected maps.
There you go.
And they were meant to be a learning tool. So the idea was, you know, you get your young British aristocrats and they like, here's the country that you should colonize and plunder. And, you know, that teach them how to carve up the world early on. It really caught on in the Great Depression for a couple of reasons. Partly, like you said, people needed a distraction, and you know, movies were huge and jigsaws were huge. Also, technology, like originally jigsaws were made with a jigsaw. They were made out of wood, carving with a jigsaw. But then they invented this cookie cutter like machine that could chop down on cardboard and make them really quickly mass produced. So during the Depression, you had these weekly dime jigsaw puzzles, and people would line up like a, I don't know, whatever people line up for now, a Billie Eilish concert.
And sure.
So, and as with all the other puzzle crazes, you had moral panic. You had a preacher who said, Nero fiddled while Rome was burning, and we will go down in history as the nation who worked jigsaw puzzles while our country was falling to ruins. And
amazing.
Cartoons, alarmist, I would
a
argue.
A little, perhaps. Yes. No, it did not fall to
No, I'm
pieces.
Converted. I'm into it now.
Also, Nero, isn't Nero, the idea of Nero fiddling while Rome burns, fictitious, almost akin to let them eat cake? Like, it's just, yes, sort of like a myth fictitious that people created. Yeah,
right. I don't know. Have you covered point, that? I can't remember whether
I think
it is.
Well, the problem with the leaders of the ancient past, whether they be Roman emperors or whether they be Catholic popes, is that the history gets written after their death, usually by a guy who is terrified of upsetting the current ruler. So they'll say, okay, that guy was terrible. And, you know, usually there's a lot of truth to that, but then they'll lean in hard so that they don't get executed.
Excellent point. Excellent point. And there was even a split in the jigsaw community during the Depression between the rich and the poor, powerful and because the rich, and there still are these fancy artisanal wooden jigsaw puzzles that you can pay thousands of dollars for, and they're hand carved. And one of the famous ones during the Depression was called Parr puzzles. And this is a fun fact, but they had all of these high end ones have a signature piece, like a shape that is in every puzzle. Mm. And the shape that Parr went with in the 30s was a swastika.
Oh, boy.
And that turned out to be not a great choice. They had to switch to a seahorse.
We love seahorses here on Ridiculous.
They're much nicer. Yeah.
Seahorse teeth. That's right.
we did an episode on I believe it was just weird dental stuff, and there was a material that dentures were once made out of that was referred to as seahorse teeth, which when you read it on paper, it just seems beyond ridiculous because seahorses are so small. Do they even have teeth? But what it was referring to actually was hippopotamus teeth. They're referring to them as seahorses, which is a delightful misnomer.
I heard that on this very show.
Yeah.
That
is gosh, thank you.
And also, it made me think, because hippopotamus, I do believe hippo is horse and potamus is river.
It's like river. River horse is what it translates to. And it's not that far off. Also, if you're around a hippopotamus, leave.
Yeah.
They are the most dangerous land animal that is not the most dangerous land mammal, right? Shout out to the mosquitoes for most dangerous animal or humans. Mm-hmm. Moving on. So there are these bespoke, there's a spectrum of jigsaws then, right? The mass produced ones. And then there's this upper echelon of bespoke, hand carved, hardwood, what have yous. And those are probably the ones that the aristocrats are still buying, right?
Yeah. And they have, I mean, there's a wonderful company, if you can afford it, which I can't, is called Stave, and they're in Vermont, and they make these wooden puzzles. Everyone is different, and they have people just carving them in what looks like a huge sewing machine. And Bill Gates is a client, and they're thousands of dollars. Like they are, they can go up to $10,000, and they're super tricky. The guy who founded them calls himself the tormentor in chief, because he'll have puzzles that they look like edge pieces, but they're not. They have holes in the middle of the puzzle. They have pieces from other puzzles intentionally stuck in that don't fit at all, just to mess with your mind.
I'm looking at just for reference, Ridiculous Historians. I am looking at stavepuzzles.com.
Me too.
I am looking at their Hanukkah puzzle right now. It is 200 pieces. It is $2,395. And just from the picture, it looks kind of simple. I'm looking at it and I'm thinking, I could knock this one out.
They've got some neat depth to them, but I will say, based on the whole idea of puzzle lending libraries, they have a rental program. And a timeshare program for their puzzles. So that's how you know. And they have a whole page that explains the difference. So
hilarious. Yeah, that's the, I mean, they, I hope they're not listening, because they, for the book, they lent me like 5 beautiful puzzles.
Oh, wow.
And I just have not had a chance to return them, but I will stay.
We believe you.
Yeah. As long as you eventually return it, it's fine.
Yeah.
Right.
Like in 50 years.
I have been borrowing I think the statute's passed. I've been borrowing a encyclopedia from my high school for quite some time now, but I will return it at one point when I am done reading it.
Oh, nicely done, Ben.
I don't know if they need it back, Ben. I think the internet has sort of replaced the encyclopedia.
They'll be like,
those
what
were
is this?
Sold door to door, and they were very valuable.
I loved it.
It was a golden time.
Say, I had a, I've got an unabridged dictionary, not encyclopedia, because that would be in a set, right? But for sure. Man. And that's kind of a puzzle too when you think about it. I guess it goes to what we define as a puzzle. And, you know, you talked briefly about the Rubik's Cube, which I don't know about you, Noel, but those are still pretty baffling to me. I can work through it, but I'm constantly befuddled and baffled by those speed cubers.
Mm-hmm.
Start
amazing.
A thing.
And, and then there's even more elaborate versions and shapes and sort of like three-dimensional sort of hexagonal versions or whatever. But whenever I think of these three-dimensional puzzles, I don't know about you guys, my mind always goes back to the lament configuration from Clive Barker's Hellraiser movies. And I'm a little suspicious of these because I'm always afraid they're going to summon these demonic, you know, S&M creatures from hell. But I don't know about you. Tell us about 3D puzzles and some of these, like, what's the 15 puzzle? And I believe there was a bit of a scandal involved in that one too.
Yeah, this was a spatial puzzle. This was sort of the Rubik's Cube of its time, the 1880s. And it was called, you've actually, I'm sure, seen it. It's the little square with 15 tiles and an empty space, and you have to rearrange the tiles. So it's
like a Cracker Barrel.
I've got several.
Yes,
of these.
Like a Cracker Barrel.
With the
exactly.
Ignoramus. So yeah, that's what
this was huge in the 1880s. And again, it was like a New York Times called a pestilence on our society. And it was invented by a postal worker. But the main character in this craze was a huckster. He was like this huckster named Sam Lloyd.
Can we get some like huckster con man music?
Yeah.
This will sound great in post.
So he claimed to have invented them, even though he didn't, and he sold millions of them. And partly he did it by scamming America. He said that he would pay $1,000, which in 1880, something. He said anyone who can solve the 15 puzzle from this particular starting arrangement will get $1,000. But the catch was it was rigged. There are 7 billion initial arrangements of the 15 puzzle, and half of them can be solved, and half mathematically just cannot be solved. So he put them in an impossible arrangement and just messed with people's minds and sold millions of them. And that one sort of died out. It's not like crosswords are still big, but the 15 puzzle, it had a little resurgence when Bobby Fischer, the chess legend and slightly disturbed personality.
They're still searching for him.
There you go.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, I think he was searching for himself for a while, too.
Yes, for sanity. He was obsessed with them and speed solved one on the Johnny Carson show in 1972, and he, like, in 17 seconds. So that chess and 15 puzzles were Bobby Fischer's obsessions.
And this is nuts because we can see, you know, chess requires such a, dare I say, myopic commitment to it. That other puzzles, because chess is a game that is also a puzzle, right? So I think when you get so deep into the world of chess, and I'm cartoonishly bad at that game, when you get so deep into it, then other puzzles seem kind of like elementary. It's like playing a really hard video game, and then you go back to solitaire, and you're like, oh, I got this. It's a black 8. It's a red 7. Nailed it.
I guess it all comes down to something called game theory, right? And like, you know, a good puzzle, and to maybe a question that I asked earlier, like what makes one of these really catch on? It needs to be difficult enough to be not so banging your head against a wall, but also difficult enough to like really feel like you have a challenge and that you've succeeded in some small way if you solve it. Can you just talk a little bit about what you've run into in terms of game theory and like how that sort of intersects with these? And to Ben's point, like how puzzles now kind of are in the realm of video games in a lot of ways.
Oh yeah, some of the greatest puzzles now are video games, which my kids always argue. It's like, I'm not wasting time, I'm doing but like you said, there's a Goldilocks zone. Like it's very easy to make an impossible puzzle, and it's also easy to make a too easy puzzle, so you want it just in the middle.
This episode of Ridiculous History is brought to you by Mint Mobile.
You know, Ben, I got to say, one of the best parts about spring cleaning is that post-clean clarity you get where you're like, man, how have I been living like this? What's wrong with me?
You're right, Noel. It's kind of like when you find out you've been paying a fortune for wireless when Mint Mobile has phone plans for $15 a month when you purchase a three-month plan.
It's time to switch to Mint Mobile and get unlimited talk, text, and data for $15 a month.
To get this new customer offer and your new three-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/ridiculous.
That's mintmobile.com/ridiculous. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/ridiculous.
$45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first three-month plan only.
Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply.
See Mint Mobile for details. Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. This episode is brought to you by eBay Motors. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Noel, do you remember your favorite car?
Well, yeah. It was an Eddie Bauer edition Ford Explorer.
Oh, that's and cool.
I just remember it was my dad's. I was a hand-me-down car kind of kid. Dad would buy a new car. I'd get that car. And I just remember feeling so awesome being up above everybody. Like I was in Mad Max or something, you know?
I had a lot of land yachts that I loved. I had Pontiac Bonnevilles.
Right.
Oh, I never had an El Camino. My dad had one. And that was a real interesting use of our collective time, keeping that thing running. But I think these cars all kind of speak to us because they were such a fundamental part of our lives. Do you remember when I had that Monte Carlo?
That's what I meant. I said El Camino and I meant Monte Carlo.
I miss it. So the Monte Carlo was tough. I had a series of Monte Carlos and the last one, God bless it. I had to learn a lot about car maintenance just to keep that guy running.
Totally.
But it still was like a perfect fit. It's almost like finding your true love. You know, like when you recently got a car a few years back now.
Oh, man. And funny you should say that. That particular perfect fit was the Honda Fit, which I love dearly. But Ben, it's getting a little long in the tooth. And while it's been incredibly reliable up to now, it's getting to that age where I might have to start looking for some parts here and there to keep it running.
Mm-hmm. And that's where eBay Motors comes in. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly.
Brake kits, LED headlights, roof racks, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it.
And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back.
Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash.
So keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com.
Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
And speaking of chess, there are what are called chess puzzles or chess problems where you set up the pieces in a certain way and you have to get to checkmate in, you know, five moves. And I actually, for the book, I interviewed Garry Kasparov.
Oh, cool.
And he says, I'm not the best chess. I was the best chess player, but chess puzzles are different. It's a different skill. And he said, like, there are crazy chess puzzles that not even the best chess puzzlers can do that require 500 moves. You have to see 500 moves in advance. The only only artificial intelligence can solve them. Only computers can solve these. That's not a fun puzzle unless you're a sentient robot. Maybe you find enjoyment. A fun puzzle is right in there where it's like five moves and it's surprising. That's what it's like. You have to sacrifice your queen. Something surprising and delightful. That to me makes a good puzzle.
Got it.
I think another good puzzle thing to this point, and this brings us to our next craze, which may be near and dear to some of our listeners. One of the other incredibly like tantalizing things about a good puzzle is you realize that if you shift your perspective, right, if your mind is the piece that moves, then you will see the answer that has already been there the entirety of the time, which brings us to the great obsession of 1980s America amid a certain demographic, and of course, someone who will always be welcome at conventions and cosplay gatherings. We ask you, AJ, where is Waldo?
Where is Waldo? Exactly. He is all over, at least in the 80s. And I loved researching the history of Where's Waldo, because there's a long history of artists hiding stuff in paintings. So there's one Renaissance painter who is famous for hiding a pickled cucumber in all of his paintings. So I'm sure Freudians have, yes, he's got something going on. Leonardo da Vinci also hid things in his paintings, not as much as Dan Brown claimed in the Da Vinci Code. You know, I don't think that the Last Supper is a secret a clue that Jesus is a proud papa. But I do think that there are legitimate art historians who say there are Easter eggs. And like in The Last Supper, if you look at the arrangement of the rolls, the bread rolls on the table, it looks eerily like notes on in musical notes. And people have played these notes, and it's not bad. It sounds cool. So there was that.
Little known fact, Da Vinci also hid actual penises in many of his paintings. So,
yeah. Is that true? In the Mona Lisa, you can see
the nudes. You know.
I see. Yeah.
Carry on.
Wasn't so hard to find those.
No.
Yeah. Speaking of that, I don't know what that segue means.
It doesn't matter.
Martin Hanford is the British artist who probably has a penis, and he is the one who created the Where's Waldo in 1987.
God dang it.
So smooth. And he had done a couple of Where's Waldo-like paintings. He did an album cover for a group called The Vapors. I don't know. I had never heard of them.
Sounds like a surf rock situation, perhaps. I don't know.
Yeah. That was a little more adult. That was a crowd scene, and there was a secret sniper, with a rifle, which would not go over with Where's Waldo. But he came out with Where's Waldo in 1987, and this, of course, are these huge scenes, and you have to find the little guy with the red and white striped sweater and the glasses. And it was massive, 40 million copies sold all over the world. And there's actually, the original was called Where's Wally? That's what it was called in Britain. And Waldo is the American one. And I have a couple of the foreign ones. There is, maybe you can guess. Where is the Wa ist Walter?
German, right?
Okay. Also, to jump in real quick, the Vapors are an English new wave and power pop band that initially existed between 1978 and 1981.
They look
cool.
They
had a hit song which was titled "Turning Japanese." Which
we know "Turning Japanese."
Of course,
I really think so. Yeah.
Yes.
The album cover is neat. I mean, you really can see the "Where's Waldo" aesthetic, but it is like a crowd scene. But in the center, it's sort of on a grassy knoll situation, and the figures are crowded around this like sort of like cadre of ambulances, because it would appear that someone has been shot because you can see in the top corner the Waldo of this painting is in fact a sniper putting away his gun, but the center crowd, it makes the shape of an eye and like everything else above it. It's really cool. But and also on this article that I found on Unremembered History that shows this, it points out that he was really inspired by a lot of classical paintings that have these tableaus where there's like a city or a scene, a village, and there's all kinds of stuff going on, people doing all kinds of little things, and they're full of Easter eggs, you know?
Yeah. There's some great Easter eggs like Hieronymus Bosch.
Exactly.
I think there is theories that he was tripping on some hallucinogen.
I wouldn't doubt it. Those are very,
but
very
they are
weird.
Disturbing. Yeah.
I was able to see some of those in person earlier this year, the Bosch paintings, and they still don't let you photograph them, which I feels like kind of a rip to me, but I'm sure there are legitimate reasons. Museum restorationists and curators, please understand that we've got your back, and we're not going to take pictures any longer where we are not supposed to, because let me tell you, I had to learn a language pretty quickly with that museum curator when I got caught snapping and snitching with my iPhone, which takes us to another thing. So where's Waldo? The answer is around the world, but he's using different identities. Is that
Let me just give you one more. There's Finn Holga. Finn Holga is,
I would say, my accent is not flawless.
What's that?
Finland, perhaps, or somewhere in Scandinavia?
It's Danish. Yeah, Danish. So yes, Denmark, yes, yes. Yeah. But can I give you my favorite Where's Waldo fact?
Oh, please.
Is that it has been consistently on the American Library Association's list of most banned books. And what? I researched this, and this is not apocryphal. This is because in one beach scene in one of his books, there's a small illustration of a woman, and she's not wearing a bikini top. And some mothers got really upset, and you can't even see, like, there's no actual nipple. You can sort of see a side boob, but because she's lying face down. But it was enough to get banned in several states and make this list. And the publisher had to do like an emergency version with a new bikini top.
A collector's item. And wait till the New York Times finds out about this. I think we're due for another moral panic. Well,
you know, what's interesting, though, the aesthetic of Where's Waldo, to me, is very European. Like, just the whole vibe of it feels like a book that would be popular in Europe. And, you know, they are much more open about nudity and little things. And this, you know, a nude sunbather is something that would be a normal thing to see in a beach scene. You can only do so many different things and have it be like super crowded. So it makes perfect sense that he would have done that. But
Excellent point.
I don't know.
No one in England or in Germany was complaining about
Right. Yeah. I was going to say famously more chill, but I guess it depends on the era of time that we're referring to. Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. This episode is brought to you by eBay Motors. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Noel, do you remember your favorite car?
Well, yeah, it was an Eddie Bauer edition Ford Explorer.
Oh, that's cool.
I just remember it was my dad's. I was a hand-me-down car kind of kid. Dad would buy a new car, I'd get that car. And I just remember feeling so awesome being up above everybody, like I was in Mad Max or something, you know?
I had a lot of land yachts that I loved. I had Pontiac Bonnevilles.
Right.
Oh, I never had an El Camino. My dad had one, and that was a real interesting use of our collective time, keeping that thing running. But I think these cars all kind of speak to us because they were such a fundamental part of our lives. Do you remember when I had that Monte Carlo?
That's what I meant. I said El Camino, and I meant Monte Carlo.
I miss it so. The Monte Carlo was tough. I had a series of Monte Carlos, and the last one, God bless it, I had to learn a lot about car maintenance just to keep that guy running.
Totally.
But it still was like a perfect fit. It's almost like finding your true love. You know, like when you recently got a car a few years back now.
Oh, man, and funny you should say that. That particular perfect fit was the Honda Fit, which I love dearly. But, Ben, it's getting a little long in the tooth. And while it's been incredibly reliable up to now, it's getting to that age where I might have to start looking for some parts here and there to keep it running.
Mm-hmm. And that's where eBay Motors comes in. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly.
Brake kits, LED headlights, roof racks, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it.
And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back.
Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash.
So keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com.
Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
This episode of Ridiculous History is brought to you by Snagajob.
Snagajob is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring.
With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs on demand, temp to hire, part-time, or full-time.
You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer.
Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that.
With their easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way.
Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right?
Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly.
Visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert.
Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
So, speaking of having so many things, we have made this a two-parter, and we can't talk about every puzzle. Unfortunately, to learn more, you're going to have to read AJ's book, The Puzzler, and tune into the Puzzler podcast. But before we go, fellow Ridiculous Historians, there's one that I'm sure we've all been waiting for. I hope we have.
I jumped the gun and set up the wrong thing when I was talking about the lament configuration, which is sort of this hellish Rubik's cube. But this, now we're here with the idea of three-dimensional puzzles, and specifically Rubik's cube being the craze, but that wasn't the only example of this type of thing.
Right. Wait, can I just do one last visual puzzle? Because it could be my favorite puzzle ever. It was a few years, about 3 years ago, the Baltimore Sun printed one of those spot the difference puzzles. Mm-hmm. And it was two pictures. You know, you have to find the difference. And it was a kid brushing his teeth in his pajamas. And the next day, the best correction in newspaper history, it said, "We regret to inform you that those two pictures were actually identical."
Amazing. You've always thought that, right? Like, if you're looking at a very difficult version of those, you've always thought, okay, this is a prank. So that
makes you feel like you're going insane, is what it makes you feel like. Yeah.
It wasn't even April Fool's. It was just they messed up. And can you imagine the hours of human waste, you know, wasted?
You refused, your mind refuses to accept that in the moment. You're like, right. No, I'm just missing something.
The pattern.
And I will find it. Damn it.
I do have immense respect, though, for that hypothetical person who is in that rarefied cognitive air, the person who not only looked at this extensively, but wrote to the Baltimore Sun and told them the picture was identical. That's a lot of self-confidence.
Oh, yeah.
That is true.
Kind of like the people that leave mean podcast reviews, you know. Who are these people and where do you get your chutzpah? But if we could, though, I would love to hear a little bit more about some of these kind of art object type puzzles. You know, I think they're like, I don't know if you saw Glass Onion, there was so many cool puzzles that were like these, you know, things that you interact with that were all crazy bespoke. But to me, in my mind, I always go back to the humble Rubik's Cube, but that represents sort of a modernized, you know, plasticified 80s version of something that's very historical, you know, and that you would have seen in like the Dan Browns of the world kind of writings.
Totally. Things like that. Well, let me give you a quick Rubik's Cube and then we'll move to like sort of the advanced Rubik's Cube. But the Rubik's Cube was invented by Erno Rubik. He was an architecture teacher in Hungary and he wanted to use it as a teaching tool. Now, this makes me feel better. It took Erno Rubik himself 1 month to solve his own cube.
Oh, wow.
So,
I only know that because years ago, I wrote a show called The Stuff of Genius, and we went and looked at inventors at the world. And that's one of the facts that stuck with me. First off, I love it when an invention is named after the guy who actually invented it. You know what I mean?
Right.
Nice. And I also love, just to get this part in, I also love that that fact that he created something he didn't understand. It reminds me a little bit of artificial intelligence. Well,
I was going to ask. I mean, it seems to me like, you know, I would assume that anyone that's creating a puzzle or in designing a game, that they're what's the process for that? Like, I would imagine that in a lot of cases you're working backwards from the solution. But this is a great example of how maybe that's not always the case.
Yeah, he writes about it in his autobiography, and I actually found it very inspiring. He talks about how he packed his room with all sorts of just random crap. So like safety pins and buttons and crayons. And it was like a little playground for his mind. And from that, he eventually came up with the Rubik's Cube that he couldn't solve. And actually, it was very hard to sell it to a toy company because they were like, this is too hard. No one's going to want to do this. And finally, he sold it to the Ideal Toy Company. And they, you know, as you know, it just became a phenomenon. There have been about a half a billion of them sold by some estimates, jeez, which is a lot of Rubik's Cubes. At the height in the 80s, there was a Saturday morning cartoon of a flying, crime-solving Rubik's Cube
with
a theme song by Menudo.
Cocaine was a hell of a drug, my friend.
Finally, the theme song from Menudo, which is the stamp of authenticity.
Exactly.
There was a video game in the early 90s that starred the red dot that was the logo for Sprite. And it wore sunglasses and just bounced around and did stuff. So there was a golden age of anthropomorphizing anything in a cartoon.
Chester the Cheetah had a game at some point, but that was more 90s. And this is fascinating, too, because you had pointed out to us that although it's called the Rubik's Cube today, it had a different name. Right. Originally.
Well, it had all sorts of, I mean, before they went with the Rubik's Cube, they were thinking the Gordian knot, the Inca gold, the Hungarian cube. But Rubik is such a great word, and it kind of rhymes with cube, and it worked. It took off and it became a phenomenon. And what's funny is I interviewed all of these like old school 1980s champions. And first
like
of
cube
all,
vets?
Yeah,
cube
the
veterans?
Cube, the old style. And I mean, it's kind of sad because their records, they were all proud, like they got 23 seconds. And they were like, yeah, that was the first world record was about 23 seconds. And now the world record is 3.47 seconds.
That's insane because you can see these videos on YouTube, right?
Right.
From these, they're much more frequent than annual now. I'm sure there's an annual world competition, but there are a lot of regional things where these guys do it like one-handed.
Blindfolds.
They look away or they put it behind their back. It's just astonishing.
With their feet, there's a foot cube guy. I met the North American world record holder for the futsal.
For the futsal, is there a standard like the way you have like in gambling, someone takes calipers to your dice and makes sure it's regulation. It's evolved. You know, I think the gears are a lot smoother now. You know, that's probably partially why the times have been so decreased. But can you talk a little bit about like what are these standards for competitive play in the modern day Rubik's Cube world?
Well, it is hilarious because you talk to the old timers and they have a grudge because like you say, it's much smoother. There are little magnets are allowed so that it clicks into place. There's Cube Lube. You can get lots of different like brands of Cube Lube and lube up your Rubik's. But yeah, of course, there are definitely... it has to be mixed up in a certain way, but there is a little bit of luck involved because it could be mixed up in a way that it only needs 14 turns or whatever.
Like it lends itself to the algorithm, right?
Right. And these kids, and it's mostly kids, memorize hundreds, thousands of algorithms because I did it, but I did the easy way. Like there's one algorithm for people like me. But
that'll eventually get you there.
Yeah, I know that one.
When you say algorithm, like I guess maybe I'm sort of maybe not thinking about that term correctly. But is that just numbers of configurations and possibilities, or what? Can you talk a little bit more about what algorithm means when it comes to solving a Rubik's Cube?
Sure. In the cubing community, as it's called, it's basically a series of moves. So it's twist right, twist up, twist down, twist left, And that is an algorithm. So if you have a certain arrangement, then you're going to have to do an algorithm. And by memorizing these hundreds of different ones, you can figure out the fastest algorithm.
Blast through them by process of elimination, right. Almost, kind of.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's kind of like when you read the notation for it, it gets to the point where it's similar to seeing chess notation, mm-hmm. where they're like, this is how you do this. And it's more confusing than actually getting there and just playing with the cube spatially. But I'm like you, AJ, I had to say, okay, here's the one I understand.
Right.
And this will be my afternoon.
Right.
And this craze takes over because it follows some of the same things we've learned that make puzzles historically fascinating, right? You do have a feeling of progress. I think that's one thing we have to make. We do have the feeling of an answer being right in front of us, but we're part of the puzzle, and we simply need to shift the blocks of our perspective. Mm-hmm. I went a little far on that one. But but as you were saying, this is – it has maybe not reached the older heights of its original craze, but it's still very much a global thing, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, it had a second life with YouTube because the old people are like, oh, we had to figure out ourselves. We didn't have YouTube tutorials. But yeah, these YouTube and like you said, people who juggle them and do them underwater, mm-hmm. you know, it is pretty a wonderfully visual medium. And also, like Noel said, it's become artisanal. Like now people are making their own cubes that are not just cubes that got 12 sides that like, mm-hmm. you know, one in the shape of Michael Jordan, I saw one.
Right.
And so people have, with 3D printing, they've just become, it's like a golden age for what they're called twisty puzzles.
Twisty puzzles.
And Noel brought up that it's not just these twisty puzzles. This is a long tradition of 3D puzzles. And perhaps the most famous are puzzle boxes,
yes.
which is, isn't that the Hellraiser? That
like
was
the lament configuration,
yeah.
baby.
Lament
configuration.
We're back
around.
Yeah. From
exactly.
the Hellbound Heart.
Yeah. That's right.
The book.
That's
if
right.
Let's read it.
Can I just a really quick gripe and then I'll let you continue.
Oh, of course.
I sometimes I fall a victim to Instagram ads for products. It seems to Alex, speaking of algorithms, and I saw this, what looked to be a completely workable, manipulatable puzzle box from Hellraiser. And I ordered it and it came in and the thing is solid as a rock. Didn't have a single articulating part. It still looks really cool, but man, on that video, it was like, ooh, I want to summon those demons. But yeah, the puzzle box, right? Let's go on.
Yeah, the most famous ones are Japanese puzzle boxes.
Right.
Yeah, I've got a few of those. Actually.
You do?
Mm-hmm. I've got like the low end version.
Well,
know,
yeah,
because
they
like
can get super
puzzles.
Expensive. They can be like $50,000 for like the really high end ones. No, neither
and
do
yeah,
I.
Well, like the box that everyone gets at the beginning of Glass Onion, for example, to be invited to this, you know,
right.
getaway meeting of the minds at the billionaire's island. Everyone gets this crazy box that has to be solved in various ways, and then certain sides of it flip open, and then you twist things, and within it is a clue or whatever.
Right. And the traditional one is the Japanese one made of wood, and you slide some panels and you have to slide mm-hmm. them in a certain direction and you open
yeah.
it up. Usually there's nothing in it and sometimes an invitation to an island party, but usually it's just like, I want to open this up. And they've gotten so elaborate. There's this guy who does them on YouTube and gets millions of hits because he does them live and you get to see him curse and sweat and throw things around. Mm-hmm. And, I can't remember his name right now. Maybe Max knows it. But these things are works of art. They're quite beautiful. And the best of them, like, it's not just sliding. They get really creative. So you have to spin them. One you have to freeze because it releases something. One guy complained. He told me he ordered a puzzle box in December to Massachusetts and it came solved because it was all about freezing and it was already frozen. So he's like, I just rip off. But yeah, these things are extraordinary. And I talked to the people who do them, and one of my favorites was this guy named Kagan Sound, who's in Colorado, and he made one for the movie director. what's the name of the guy who did, he did The Whale. He did,
Darren Aronofsky.
Darren Aronofsky. He made a desk for Darren Aronofsky that it was like an Aronofsky film. It sure. took this guy 4 years to do it. And he said he lost all of his friends. He just stayed in his workshop going insane. But it's amazing. It's got all of these puzzles. I mean, it's not great if you want to get a stapler out because, like, sure. you know, you have to spend 2 hours. Yeah.
That is so but funny. It really reminds me of Aronofsky's first film, Pi, which is all about exactly. like, you know, just digging into mm-hmm. the secrets of the universe until you go completely mad. You know,
fantastic slapstick comedy, yeah, especially for the holidays. Watch with your children. So
maybe do a double feature with Requiem for a Dream.
Mm-hmm. Oh, best blind date I ever went on was going to see a blind double date, seeing Requiem for a Dream, and we were running late, so we got dinner after. It was a very surreal moment at Applebee's that evening. but with all this, you know, this is just the beginning of the story. The world of puzzles is wide and vast, and I think it's not hyperbolic to say that as long as human hardware works the way it does, puzzles will continue to iterate and proliferate in the future. And, you know, we're a ridiculous history show, but AJ, I think we have to ask you, here at the end of the week, What do you think the future of puzzles is? Is there a world where it's just AI making puzzles for each other and they just solve those?
Well, I think, I mean, AI can be used to make puzzles that are interesting and creative. I'm hoping that we can collaborate with AI and that they won't
yes.
take over all the puzzle making themselves. And in fact, on the Puzzler show, we have like an AI mm-hmm. It's called like guess the GPT chat GPT prompt. So we give you what chat GPT said and you have to guess. But I do think we are still in the golden age of puzzles. Like there are so many people now doing so much creative work in puzzles that I'm optimistic. And again, like, you know, I'm an evangelist, so I don't think I don't agree with the New York Times that it's the end of civilization and that it's a waste of time and we're going to ignore our kids. I think it's actually, at its best, it's like community building. Like I saw the guy, Josh Wardle, Wardele, who he invented Wordle, and I saw him speak at the crossword puzzle convention, and his argument is, yeah, it brings people together. Like it's a very almost, you know, like kumbaya message. He talked about, he gets letters from a gay man who reconciled with his conservative Christian mother by doing Wordle.
Wow.
It's these nice little stories about puzzles bring us together.
Well, that's funny too, because they are somewhat ideologically agnostic, kind of. Mm. You know, there is a certain common ground to them where you're sort of just trying to solve a goal. And I mean, surely there are themed puzzles that, you know, could have some sort of whatever leaning. Ooh. But in general, wouldn't you say they are kind of like an even playing field in terms of that kind of stuff?
Absolutely. And it depends on the type of puzzle, as you say. Like, you know, I think Sudoku is pretty even. It's been actually fascinating to watch the politics of crossword puzzles, because there was a few years ago, there was a movement, a lot of crossword makers of color and women they sent a petition to the New York Times saying it was too white and male. The clues and the makers were too white and male. And they've actually changed, like the New York Times. It had an mm-hmm. impact. They hired some editors who were people of color. So it depends on the type. It can get political like everything, but it can also, I do think that something like a puzzle box is accessible to anyone.
Well, and I just wanted to give you a quick recommendation, since you have kids and you're interested in video games, and it sounded like you, you know, think there is some potential and creativity in, you know, puzzles in the video game realm. We are in kind of this golden age of like indie game designs, and like, you know, with Steam and various, you know, $9-$10 games you can get, they're out there, you know, to be had. There's a game called Cocoon that is a purely just puzzle game, but it's beautifully designed. It's incredibly interactive and kind of trippy. And I think you and your kids would really dig it.
I love it.
Do, Do you guys remember Mist with a Y?
Yeah, it's got this actually has Mist, design-wise Mist qualities to it. But it's what a cool game that was.
Yeah, if you haven't played Mist, it's a nice chill point and click. And I'm with you guys. I love games that are not, you know, super high adrenaline busters. You know, they're just like, hey, let's lay back and investigate, point and click. And with this, folks, we have to tell you, we are calling it a day, but please do go to your browser, your mobile thingamajig of choice, and point and click on The Puzzler, which is, as you said, AJ, a daily show coming out with such luminary guests such as Michael Ian Black, Roy Wood Jr. I think our pal Ophira Eisenberg has been on there, as well as, it's a cavalcade of folks. We can't name them all, but we can tell you each episode brings unique, new, and fascinating puzzles with the world-class expert on them. AJ, where can people learn more about your work? Because you've done much, much more than just puzzled over puzzles.
Well, first of all, the other luminaries include Ben and soon to come Noel. So I'm very excited about that. And this is a dream. I love your podcast. So it is like, it's very weird to be on a podcast you love.
It's very weird.
Very weird indeed. I do just want to say, though, we had intended to do two different topics, and I may have even set it up weirdly where I said that one of them was an intersection with a very recent episode that we did. And I hope that we can maybe even just go ahead and do it before the holidays, you know, get you back and do this other one that is sort of about puzzles and ciphers and all of this kind of stuff. Because this one ended up being more than we would normally fit into a single episode. So we just split it, but we'd love to get that one on the books too.
Or at least January. Yeah, end of 2023, or we'll kick off 2024 with more puzzles. No spoilers, folks, but the next time AJ returns, we're going to be talking about a particularly great game. Oh my gosh, that's too much. So, thank you so much for tuning in, folks. Thanks, as always, to our super producer, Mr. Max Williams. Thanks to the one and only legendary author and now podcaster, AJ Jacobs. Noel, who else? Oh, you know what? We got to get Jonathan Strickland, a.k.a. the Quizster, to get his act together.
That's right. The Quizster and the Puzzler? That's too much. It's too much. No, but he's getting... That's right. We got to get him in before the end of the year.
I know. He's in building right now.
Oh, yeah, Jesus Christ.
Well, I can
don't send, say his name too many times. People
I
will show up.
I don't know. Beetlejuice
like
rules.
Beetlejuice rules. Now I'm glad that I'm not in the building. But we do want to thank, though, Alex Williams, who in fact is Max's brother, who composed our theme, which is definitely playing right now. Christopher Asiotis and Eves Jeffcoat here in spirit. Ben, thank you. AJ, but once again, thank you. It was an absolute pleasure. And I look forward to having you back soon and also getting in that hot seat.
Hell yeah. I can't wait. We'll be gentle.
I appreciate it.
Puzzle away.
We'll see you next time, folks. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Happy Pride from Tomboy X, celebrating Pride and the queer community all year. Queer founded, queer run, and the makers of the original boxer briefs for women, creating sustainable size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies so you feel comfortable in your own skin. Tomboy X just dropped their Pride 24 collection, obsessively fit tested for all day comfort in sizes 3 extra small through 6X. Visit tomboyx.com.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.